You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where we're still waiting for Funko to release a line of pop vinyls based on us. I'm Justin M. Lesneski, and I'm excited because the NFL season has finally started again. This week was the first week of preseason games, and we have a new favorite player. No, calm down, he's not a Patriot. In an interview with the New York Post, New York Giants rookie running back Andre Williams answered a question about what his favorite book is with, Ayn Rand wrote a book called The Fountainhead, and she also wrote Atlas Shrugged. I mean, I guess technically he didn't say they were his favorite books, he just said that they existed. He also stated that his favorite movie is Watchmen. We applaud you, Mr. Williams. We just wish you didn't play for the Giants. Joining me this week, via Skype, from our nation's capital, Daniel T. Richards. How are you, Daniel?
I'm already sick of pro-Palestinian protesters packing the highway so that I can't get anywhere.
Is that really going on?
In a couple places, yeah. They've caused a little bit of gridlock.
Are they just standing on the highway? I have no idea what this is.
It's mostly protesting downtown, but that causes backup in traffic, which causes backup on the highways, which causes mass chaos. So other than that, life's swell.
Which is what Israel says all the time.
Yeah.
Also joining me via Skype from the House of Mouse, Elliot Rivera. How are you, Elliot? Are you fully recovered yet?
I am. I had a bad piece of cat at the Chinese buffet, but I'm okay now.
This is what I want to know. Was it actually the cat, or was it Guardians of the Galaxy that did it to you?
I actually haven't made my way to Guardians of the Galaxy yet, because, we don't have to get into it now, but the plans that I made fell through.
So this was basically the cat you got served was a DC conspiracy to stop you from seeing the latest Marvel hit.
Probably, yeah. Yeah, I'm going to go with that.
Or the Palestinians. Yeah. We can just blame them for everything.
Ugh, Palestinians. Daniel, if you see any of those queers for Palestine people, kick their asses for me, will you?
I don't think it'd be hard.
I'd like to point out that Elliot is gay, just to be clear.
Listeners know by now.
Well, to any new listeners we might have who just opened up this file and they're listening to the first 2-3 minutes of the podcast, and they're like, now they're beating up gays? No, Elliot is gay. It's not the gay he has a problem with. Our Palestinian listenership just plummeted. Speaking of hating people and things that are said irrationally, it wouldn't be a new NFL season if someone didn't call the Patriots cheaters. Let's talk about the latest culprit in the news with Daniel T. Richards.
Everybody panic, the Patriots are cheating. They're cheaters, they cheat, they're cheating, cheating, cheaters. At least according to cornerback Kerry Williams, hopefully no relation to Andre Williams of the Giant. He is a Philadelphia Eagles cornerback, and he said in a recent interview, quote, I give them all the credit in the world, but one fact remains, they haven't won a Super Bowl since they got caught. On Tuesday, Williams stood by his comment saying, did I say the wrong thing? No, I stand firm on what my beliefs are, and that's just fine. I didn't tell a lie. I'm a little teapot, short and stout. End quote.
I give them all the credit in the world for robbing that bank. That's essentially what he said, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. No offense meant. No offense meant. They're swell. They're swell at murdering children. Mm-hmm. They are the best child murderers I have ever witnessed. No offense.
Right. And look, I'm not interested in the fact that he called them cheaters. Like, this has been refuted by reality so many times. 538 just released a statistical analysis now that proves that Spygate had no effect on anything, blah blah blah. This is my problem with this. As you saw when you clicked on this link, this is the hysteria edition of Welcome to the Midside. And this whole Patriots are cheaters thing is a hysteria that's never going to go away. And the reason it's never going to go away is because there is a group of people, and I don't know, I don't think they're connected. I don't know where it came from. I don't know how it happened. But they just think if you repeat things over and over again, it will be accepted as true one day. And Kerry Williams has made himself part of this group. Not intentionally. He's not like, I'm going to join that group, but he repeats this stuff because it makes him feel better, I guess. And it's just annoying because the repetition seemingly refutes reality.
Right. It's the 10% of the brain argument, right? It's just, it sounds correct to people who don't really know anything, and it sounds kind of cool. And so you just repeat it over and over again, and eventually they make a movie out of it that makes lots of money when it shouldn't.
I love that he's putting himself into the role of the victim towards the end of the piece. You know, they're going to come after me. I don't care if they come after me. They don't scare me, blah, 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 blah. Then why do you have to say that?
Well, that's where this whole repetition thing comes in, right? So it becomes an extra level of the beyond the Patriots are cheaters. It becomes, oh, ESPN's behind the Patriots too because they're based in Bristol, Connecticut, which is part of New England. And the NFL is behind the Patriots too because Kraft is the most powerful owner. So then it becomes this giant conspiracy theory. And we've seen these conspiracy theories on both sides of the aisle. This has nothing to do with politics. This is just people repeating whatever sounds true to them and makes them feel good.
Yeah, Coach. Right.
Yeah, even the Sports Nation poll connected to this article. It says Eagles CB Kerry Williams called the Patriots cheaters. Would you also call them cheaters? 60% say yes, 40% say no, of 53,115 voters.
It's insane. And here's another fact of reality they're ignoring. Do you know who Williams used to play for?
Oh?
The Ravens.
Oh.
You want to talk about cheating? One of the things, the rules they changed this season is they're paying more attention to cornerbacks holding downfield. Because how did the Seahawks and the Ravens win the last two Super Bowls? They had very aggressive physical corners who held the receivers. The Ravens, that was their entire strategy when they won 2 years ago. They played the numbers. They thought, oh, well, if we hold every play, they're not going to call it every play, so we're going to get the advantage in the long run. And you know what? They were right.
Yeah.
But no one talks about that because they see themselves as this victim mentality because what city do they represent? Baltimore, and they very much take on the persona of the city.
The naturalistic city of Baltimore. Well, I just want to warn our listeners that this will not be the last you hear of football, because while here at the Midside, we have enjoyed our good pop culture discussions, as the football season begins, you will hear a lot more football stories.
And let's be serious, aren't we kind of fucking sick of superhero movies, which I say when we have two superhero stories coming up?
Yeah, I think I'm ready to retire superhero movies for the summer. Get some football, some closer to real life superheroes.
Yeah, I was going to say, isn't Tom Brady really a superhero? I mean, Captain America, Chris Evans or Tom Brady?
Golden boy.
Chris Evans, baby. Oh, yeah.
Nonetheless, the internet was in a panic and hysteria this week when it was realized that a man bought all the pies in a Burger King to spite a spoiled child.
I love this story.
An anonymous man took to Reddit to ask the question, am I a bad person?
That was
for
redundant.
This?
Of course he's anonymous. It's Reddit.
I'm not anonymous on Reddit. Am I the only one? Anyway, the point being, he went to Reddit to ask, am I a bad person for this? In which he relates a story. I won't read the whole story, but the gist of it is he goes into a Burger King. It's a long line. A woman comes in behind him with a child who is screaming and hitting her and throwing his Game Boy around. And the child starts yelling, I want a fucking pie. I want a fucking pie. I want a fucking pie. And after about 5-10 minutes in line, the guy's getting pissed off. He turns around and asks the woman, hey, could you calm your child down? And of course she gets mad saying, who are you? To say how I should raise my son. And she's petting his head and calling him her sweet little snowflake. And so when the man finally gets to the register, he orders all the pies in the entire restaurant and walks out with them while giving the woman a death glare.
And the finger.
And the finger.
And he takes a bite out of the pie when he's walking out.
Right, he takes a bite out of the pie and gives her the finger.
He's walking out the door and he hears the mother yelling at the cashier. And the cashier tells her, yeah, well, he bought all the pies. And so when she turns to look, he takes a bite out of the pie. I want to write this screenplay. You don't even know.
It's interesting you say that because I don't believe this actually happened.
Oh.
I think this is one of those fantasies that you come up with later that you wish you would have done. And he just wrote it on Reddit because he thought it was a good story.
That could be. But nonetheless, as a, whether it happened or as a parable, do you think that this guy did the right thing?
If it did happen, I do think this guy is a bad person, but not because he was vindictive. I don't really give a shit about that. This is why I think he was a bad person. Because he made the decision to buy 23 of something he didn't want or need based upon somebody else.
It's interesting. It depends. You know, there's a lot of context about this person we don't know. This person could have been Bill Gates and been a multi-billionaire, in which case the money would have meant nothing to him, and the satisfaction he got out of it was worth more. Now, he's in Burger King line, so he's probably not a billionaire.
And he talked about his splurge on burgers.
Yeah, his splurge on burgers. Good point. Mm-hmm. So I think you're right in that sense. There is something about me that does appreciate this. Whether or not it makes, I think he's a bad person or not, there's something about me that says that as a culture, we've decided, and this is going to sound a little bit familiar to Adam Kroll listeners, which I am one, we've decided not to shame people anymore for behavior we don't like, unless it's, of course, environmentalist nonsense. But we tend to let people do whatever they want in the situations, whether it's scream or yell or have a tantrum, and we don't hold anyone accountable socially for it.
Well, I think there's a reason for that. I agree with you completely, and I'm the same way with you, where I feel sympathetic towards this guy, where I'm like, yeah, good job, fuck them, you showed them. But the reason is, and it's internal to the story, where he talks about, and he turned around and he said, hey, can you control your kid? Like, this is ridiculous that he's doing this. There are other people in this store. And how did she respond to him?
She pet his head, called him precious,
said, no,
he'll get you
son.
A wiggle pie.
How
oh,
did she
to
respond
the
to the guy?
Oh, yeah, she yelled, told him to mind his own business.
And that's the problem, is they've won the shame game.
Right, but think of it if everyone in line, when he had said that, had said, yes, actually, could you please control your kid? Or, in fact, if the Burger King manager had come out and said, please control your child or we're going to have to ask you to leave.
They're not going to do that because we think people have the, we've accepted the premise that people have the right to act however the fuck they want. And if you tell them how to act differently, then you're the one who's being the asshole. That's why no one in line stuck up for the guy. So that's how they've won the shame game. I agree completely with the idea that we don't shame these people like they deserve, but the deeper problem is we don't believe they deserve to be shamed.
Yeah. Well, look at the, poll at the end of this article. It says, is this person a bad person for this? 96% said no, which I think is hysterical.
Behind the safety of their computers, not in public. They'd be too afraid in public because they don't want to feel the wrath of being shamed too.
Yes, indeed.
I will tell you, I think Justin's onto something though, because you like me, look, I work at Disney. It's spoiled brat central some days. There are other days where the kids are little angels, but for the most part, you do get those spoiled brats whose parents do not have them under control. So, I mean, really, it's not what he did to the kid. It's the fact, it's really that he did it to the mother, and she deserved it, personally. Because it's the parents. It comes down to the parents.
It's much more general than that, though. Daniel, I'm going to recount a story that you witnessed when we were in Vegas. So we were in New York by the roller coaster, and I was talking, and I stopped, and I was basically out of the way, and some guy hit me with his shoulder to push me out of the way and keep walking by me. So I turned and I yelled at him, and I'm like, dude, why are you pushing me like that? There's no reason. And you know what happened? He kept walking, and the security guard came over and lectured me. And I'm like, dude, why are you talking to me? He's the one who pushed me. And he's like, I know, but you're upset, and if there's a fight, we call the cops, and there's no way of proving who was right and who was wrong. And I'm like, didn't you witness it? Aren't there other witnesses? Like, it was really obvious. But whoever's the one protesting the most is the one who gets in trouble, not the one who actually committed the wrong.
They're not interested in justice. They want quiet. That's what they want.
Right, which is why everyone stays quiet in line and we don't shame people like this, because it's more shameful to be the one who's told to shut up than it is to be the one who's speaking, you know, who's disrupting. Because when you're disrupting, you're just not thinking about what you're doing. You're just acting.
Well, I am thoroughly depressed. Thank you for that.
And the poor guy, I mean, who wrote the story, I mean, he had a migraine. I mean, his migraine was getting worse because of the kids yelling.
Right.
Assuming this story is true.
Basically, if you're rationally and calmly saying, hey, could you please have your kid quiet down? I have a headache. We're in public. There's a bunch of people here. And you get yelled at, you're not the one who's at fault. And you shouldn't feel shame, even though you've been taught you should feel shame. That's the lesson. If you're being the rational one, you have correctness on your side, then be confident in that.
But that mother and kid behind Bruce Banner in a line somewhere. We'll see what happens.
He'll be through the pies away. Anyway, speaking of not accepting things, everyone was in a panic this week when it was revealed that a radical Christian went undercover at a Vancouver Pride parade to distribute gospel condoms. That's right. I love this story. Last week, a man named Bill Whatcott, a conservative Christian who feels strongly about gays in society, infiltrated a Vancouver Pride celebration, posing as a member of the Calgary Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster, a fictional branch of a very real humanist organization. There, he took pictures with parade goers and he handed out condoms that apparently said things as, I want homosexuals to turn to Jesus, and I believe that people can leave that lifestyle behind. The gospel condoms claims that everyone is born a heterosexual and that gay people suffer grievously because of their sins.
I do. That's news to me.
I'm not sure what's more disturbing about this story, what this guy did or the fact that there's a church of the flying spaghetti monster.
You know, many states actually allow members of this organization to wear colanders on their head in their driver's license photos.
No, I didn't know that, but I mean, hey, if we're going to let people wear burkas in their driver's license photos, yeah. I don't see any problem with that.
Well, that's the rationale. It. Yeah.
But like the thing about this story though, the thing that's really just like is the treatment that he got from the other parade, from the parade attendees. Because they, I mean, he even says like they treated him very warmly, very politely. They were, you know, so I mean, just that's what blows my mind. How can you be treated so well and still come away thinking these people are going to hell?
Because he's dehumanized them in his mind already. It doesn't matter what they do and how they act. They're already dead to him. There's nothing they can do. They're irredeemable. Well, it's not. Well, there's not nothing they can do. There's one thing they can do, right?
Yeah, they could like. Well, they can like the vow.
By pretending that they're not what they are.
Yeah, so. They could stop blowing people's minds. You know what I mean?
Other things.
What I really like, one of the things I like about this story is that the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster prophet, Bobby Henderson, issued a brief statement. The brief statement was, I find it all very sad, and while I hope no one actually believed this douche represents the Church of the FSM, I wonder if there's anything that can be done to keep him from using our name and symbols in the future.
I love it. Love it, love it, love it.
This is another funny thing about this story. Did you see where the guy said that he wasn't being, he said using deception to get there is okay as long as it's not malicious, because he lied to get there the whole time and everything. He pretended to be something other than he was.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't deception necessarily malicious?
Of course.
Yes. In fact, it is. That's hysterical. The other bizarre thing about this story, just one last thing to mention, is that this is Canada, so there are weird laws in Canada. And actually, this guy, Whatcott, has been previously found guilty of distributing hate speech by the Supreme Court.
Of Canada, not...
Yes, of Canada.
America's Supreme Court isn't that bad yet. Emphasis on the word yet.
Yeah, it's just, you know, as big a douche as this guy is, you know, rightly called out by the prophet, Henderson. guilty of distributing hate speech? Really?
This is a kind of cool thing to have on his resume, right? I mean, this is distributed in Canada. Drew, can you send our podcast to the Supreme Court?
Do they extradite to Canada? Please do not tell me they do.
Well, we're not going to leave. But, like, if Canada files an extradition order, do you really think the U.S. is going to let them take us? But how cool would that be to be, like, the podcast that is classified as hate speech in Canada?
I'm pretty sure Dr. Seuss is classified as hate speech in Canada. They're pretty sensitive over there. Drew, do something about that.
Dr. Seuss is hateful of free verse.
Oh, it's true. What a douche. Speaking of panic, because I know we are, Warner Brothers has moved their Batman versus Superman movie. Thank you. Thank you. That's what I was waiting for. Originally, Batman vs. Superman Dawn of Justice was scheduled to be released on May 6th, but May 6th is also when Disney's Marvel Studios is releasing Captain America 3. There was a head-to-head matchup, and it was widely believed that someone would blink, and someone did. And the internet was all aflutter. Basically, people on the internet have said that this means that Batman vs. Superman is going to fail, because they moved their movie date up.
Because now it's not in March when no movies come out, so...
Yes.
People totally won't go to see the one movie that's worth seeing in March.
And the other thing is, people were saying Warner Brothers must not have a lot of confidence in this movie if they're the ones who decided to blink.
No, the reason Warner Brothers moved it is because, like it or not, Marvel is the big man on campus. So it makes sense. You move your movie, and you know what? It actually benefits both sides. And you know who it benefits the most? The audience. Because now you people, you can go see all of these movies.
You can pay them due attention. You're not comparing one to the other, having seen them in such a short amount of time.
Faulty premise. Yeah. They're always going to compare one to the other.
But what they're nerds.
What I mean is that in terms of attention, you have the opportunity to really appreciate one, and then you can go see the other, and then you can make a better, more rational comparisons.
Faulty premise, rational comparison.
Not for all of us, sir. Some of us can make rational comparisons.
No, I know what you're saying. And, you know, I agree. I won't be seeing Captain America 3, but I just think this was a wise decision by Batman versus Superman, especially because we just saw Guardians of the Galaxy destroy the August record. So it shows that people will go see these movies basically any time of the year. So if this shatters the March record, well then, it's a huge success for DC. The upside is just so high for them.
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Should note that Batman vs. Superman will be directed by the one and only Zack Snyder.
I thought that was just understood by now. That's why
it should not go without being mentioned explicitly, just because. The article goes on to talk about all the other superhero movies that are coming out, including Warner Brothers slots for Shazam, Metal Men, 100 Bullets, The Sandman, and Fables. The studio is also considering a Justice League spinoff featuring Wonder Woman.
And don't forget Justice League, also directed by Zack Snyder. That will be coming out.
Yes, a follow-up to Batman vs. Superman. Absolutely. And then later on, even 20th Century Fox is doing two X-Men movies, Fantastic Four films. Sony Pictures is releasing another Spider-Man in both 2016 and 2018. So, and lots of superhero movies.
Sony Pictures is also doing the Sinister Six film. They're doing a Venom film, which is subtitled Carnage. And they're also doing, what is it, Black Cat, the first female-led superhero movie.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
didn't you send me that whole graphic about all the superhero movies?
I did. There's a whole shit ton coming out in the next few years.
Yeah, you didn't even mention the Wolverine one that's going to come out, another Wolverine movie.
Oh, yeah.
Which I'm excited
Absolutely.
For.
Is it,
and then, of course,
the European form of measurement, by the way?
No, that would be a metric shit ton.
Metric shit ton.
Right. No, shit ton is just standard, your imperial right. measurement. Side note, this article comes from the Wall Street Journal Speakeasy blog, and they always give you a recommended post near the end, and my recommended post is Audrey Plaza on her zombie philosophies and Saturn Returns.
You know, that was a recommended post for me on, like, Variety or Deadline or something. That's weird.
So, Audrey Plaza, zombie philosophies.
I actually have a question about Wall Street Journal, though. Does anyone else follow them on Twitter?
Yes.
Yeah.
Does it seem like all their reporters are Asian, or is that just me? Because they keep retweeting all these articles, and it seems like all of the reporters they're retweeting are Asian.
All their reporters are Trisha Takanawa.
Pretty much.
Tom, I'm standing here in front of
me. Have you noticed that?
No, I can't say I have, but I'll have to be on the lookout for it now.
Yeah, I don't really read the names of the columnists anymore or any of the reporters.
There's no one worth following.
It's just not worth it.
But is there going to be superhero movie fatigue? That's what I want to know. Will we get sick of this eventually?
You mean like Captain Fatigue? Or
no,
Mr.
Fatigue? I mean, are people just going to stop seeing these if they're all of these? Because right now, everyone's pretty much going to see all of them, right?
Well, the thing is that the Marvel universe is all one universe, and there are continuing stories that thread their way from one film to the next. So I think it really depends on how they keep the audience engaged in those threads and in those stories.
Yeah, but I already stopped caring. I didn't see Thor: The Dark World because I don't care, and I'm not going to see Captain America 3 because it's not essential to seeing Avengers 2: Age of Ultron to know these things. So who cares if I see Thor 2? I'm not going to waste my time anymore. Because they can't make a movie like Avengers 2 where it's necessary. It only adds a little bit to have seen those movies.
I think we are not going to be fatigued for a while. And partially because outside of superhero movies, movie making has become so depressing and bad that there's really nothing else.
You're either going to have your college horror film, or you're going to have your dumb guy comedy, or you're going to have your dumb girl comedy, or you're going to have your time period piece love story that's never going to get anywhere, but still will get nominated for Oscars even though nobody saw it. So those are basically the four categories that we're going to have.
But that's the thing. I saw The Neighbors, and honestly, I thought, or Neighbors or whatever. Yeah, I think it was just called Neighbors. I keep mixing it up with the name for the show, The Neighbors. But I saw Neighbors, and I enjoyed that more than I did Guardians of the Galaxy. I thought it was a better movie. I thought it was better paced. I thought the characters were better. I thought the acting was better. And I thought just generally the themes were better.
But even if that is true and I didn't see it, partially because I don't want to see anything with Zac Efron, maybe that's a bias of mine, nonetheless.
Yeah, but it's by the guy who did Forgetting Sarah Marshall and The 5-Year Engagement and Get Him to the Greek. So it's a proven comedic director.
Yeah, nonetheless, Zac Efron. And
but his
what
abs.
Was I gonna
say? How does he do though as an actor? Like, is Efron good in that role? Or?
Yeah, it's a good role for him. And you know who's great in it is Dave Franco. And if you're a Dave Franco fan, see the movie.
Hmm. My point is, even if that is true, that is the exception, definitely not the rule. By far, the vast majority of movies that come out are unwatchable, in my opinion. Compare, say, to TV, which a higher percentage of TV is watchable.
Now you give me that great transition and we still have one news story left.
hold on. Because we need our audience to panic that we're talking about Zack Snyder again.
Dun, 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 dun. What I don't know that? What that was, but...
What the hell was that? Did you just have a stroke?
Yes.
Jesus.
Now, of Zack this awesomeness Snyder, that happened.
And the Zack Snyder called into a radio station, 97.1 The Ticket in Detroit, to defend the honor of Aquaman.
Yep, and let's play that call right now.
We go to Zack on a cell phone. Is this Zack Snyder?
Hello?
Hello.
Hey, it's Zach, yeah.
This is Zack Snyder.
The Zach.
Yeah, no, I'm on my way to set right now, and I was listening to you guys on the radio, and you guys were disparaging a little bit Aquaman, just a team. I mean, it didn't feel like...
Oh, yeah, we were wondering... we were questioning why he's involved, yes.
Who he could beat.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I don't want to, like, give anything away about, you know, movie or anything like that, but I just, you know, Aquaman has some cool abilities, you know, that I think people are like, oh, what? Does he talk to animals? Because that seems like what he does, or fish or whatever. But I think, you know, the cool thing is, I mean, with Aquaman, you know, his trident, you know, people don't realize that, like, that can actually could cut the flesh of Superman if, you know, they came in contact. That's a thing that's in the canon.
Mm-hmm.
And he's super strong because, of course, he can exist at these super deep depths. So when he comes up here, it's like he's crazy strong. But anyway, Not to say he's in my movie or anything like that, but I'm just saying he's
But if he was, those were the cool things.
He has the potential to be badass, that's all I'm saying.
And now, is this indeed Zack Snyder?
I would just stay out of the water.
Yeah, it is. No, it's me. It's Zach. I called the radio. I was like, Zach, I'm going to set. And the guy who answered, I don't know who it was like, okay, hold on. And
this
I thought,
is the
okay,
director
I'm
of Batman.
They're never going to put me to it.
Well, now is this going to be? Are we going to be on your radar all the time now while you're in town? I mean, this is appointment listening.
We better not talk S about the movie.
I know, right? Exactly. So, well, you can just assume that 24 hours a day I'm listening to the radio. So if you guys, want to talk
while you're doing
me,
the movie,
calling in. Although I don't want to encourage you to say stuff, so I will call in.
That's well, oh, wait, why don't you ask him the question you were asking earlier? Has he had any brushes this summer with Ben Affleck?
Yeah, have you seen Ben Affleck at all?
He's been around town this summer.
I have seen him. You know, I do run into him occasionally.
Oh, okay.
Now, what will it take to get Jamie into the movie? We want to get him. We want to get him on the set. It's a lifelong dream of him. It's on his bucket list to at least be an extra in a movie.
I feel like it's not. It wouldn't be super difficult to get him in the movie. It seems pretty. I mean, like the guy who called in, who was, I don't know who he is, was like, "I'm in the movie. Yeah. I don't know why you're not. You're on the radio. It seems like you should be able to get in the movie."
Well, I'm talking
it
to the director.
Seems like you could pull some strings to get him in the movie.
I think you'd have a better chance of getting me in the movie than I would of getting me in the movie.
Do you need Jamie to practice screaming if he's going to be a citizen running away from danger?
By the way, I know you now better in this 1 second than I knew the guy that called in.
Yeah, see? Exactly. So it's like my resume.
All right. Well, just show up on the set, Jamie.
Oh, okay.
And,
yeah.
I'm
sure.
Yeah, Zach will just let you in. Just call over to production and we'll get you in.
All right, cool. I'll make that
Look
call.
At that.
Thanks, Zach.
All right. See? Thanks, Zach. Say hi to Ben for us.
All right. Sure will, guys.
These people don't deserve to be extras. I hope he doesn't let them on the set. The fact that they were disparaging Aquaman and that they didn't want to take Zack Snyder seriously on this phone call means that they're evil people and I hate them.
Yeah, and you know who should be extras?
Us?
Yeah,
us.
That's right.
After they make the bobbleheads.
Yeah. Well, no, they'll do. We'll be the extras first. We'll be the first extras ever to have Funko Pop vinyls.
That's right. Funko Pop, right.
So come on, call us Zack Snyder. Make us extras in all of your movies ever. Retroactively. Invent time travel, because you can.
Because you're Zack Snyder.
This is what I want to know about this story, though. Is this a PR stunt, or is this just an average guy? A guy with an average guy mentality calling in. Because it's important to note that this was a sports show he was listening to. So it's a morning sports show, and he must have just heard them talking about it.
Yeah, from what I could tell from the phone call, it sounded like he was in his car.
Yeah, so he was on his way to set. The show starts at 5 a.m. So if it's a 7 a.m. call time for him, you know, and they go till 8 or 9 at night, however long, he could conceivably have just been like, I don't want to deal with this. Or he could have just been like, oh, wow, you know, this is an opportunity for me to, like, geek out and call these people.
Yeah, he's got nothing better to do in the car, and they're talking about his new movie, and he doesn't want anyone to think poorly about poor Aquaman. He already has a bad enough reputation.
Right, so you think this is just an average guy mentality?
Yes, absolutely. It wasn't... So to say one bad thing about Zack Snyder, it wasn't articulate enough to be well thought out as a marketing thing. Like, it was a little all over the place. So I think he was driving and distracted and just calling in, maybe even a little tired, maybe a little hungover.
He's probably a little tired because he works like 13-hour days and then like deadlifts at the gym. Jesus, the guy's insane.
Yeah, so I think this was completely genuine from the evidence that I see.
I think my favorite part about this when he starts trolling them, where they're like, so they go into sycophant mode where they start trying to become extras and get him to come on the radio show all the time. And they're like, so Zach, will we be hearing from you more often? And he just deadpans and replies, well, I listen to the radio 24/7, so expect to hear from me. And he's obviously joking. He's making fun of them for not realizing he's a movie director who's busy all day.
Yeah. I like it. Just makes me like Zack Snyder even more, which I didn't think was
just
possible.
From Detroit, why was he listening to this show?
I think they're filming some of it there.
I think they're filming all of it there.
Are they?
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
if you're on the internet all day and follow the people I follow, they just tweet like set pics and like videos that like people around Detroit like try to sneak near the sets and everything. So yeah, it's definitely in Detroit.
Ooh, yeah, that explains it then.
Well, yeah, talk about cheap filming.
Yeah, I mean that's probably why they did it, right?
Yeah, if you want,
but
ruins.
Not like destroying cities and you know like neighborhoods and stuff like that for the fight scenes and.
Well, and to pick up at the end of Man of Steel, right, where everything was destroyed anyway.
Yeah, so yeah, there, absolutely. Detroit, the city's destroyed already. Except instead of villains from outer space, it was destroyed by really bad policies.
Yeah, another quick side note here. This story is on CBS Detroit website, and this specific story is being sponsored by McDonald's. So there are two huge sidebars down the sides of the story that just say, "I'm loving it."
I think that's the best that slogan's ever been.
Yes, there's a picture of Zack Snyder doing the Sig Heil.
It just took a second for me. That just sunk in. What you just did there. For those wondering, on TalkBacker, there's a user who he said that Zack Snyder was equivalent to a Nazi propagandist. He didn't say this explicitly, but he dropped the name of an obscure Nazi propagandist and said that Zack Snyder was the same as that person.
Oh, please.
So, that's what Daniel was referring to.
I'm good like that.
Appropriately, let's continue the craziness, as recently the fervor has grown around television's hottest properties. It's time for TV with Dan Mayer.
Put me into syndication, broadcast to a network station of people viewing their favorite episodes. I can't find a new pitch to throw the studio. I need a rerun to better cast the next series of events. In the air timeline lapse, my made-for-TV type was written off in the last season when I wasn't focused on.
Over at Mediaite, they are reporting, as many sites are, on the supposedly impending fifth season of Arrested Development. The Netflix chief content officer, Ted Sarandos, said a fifth season of the show is just a matter of when. So I have a question for you, Daniel and Elliot. For me, it's not a question of when. It's a question of why?
Why?
I was going to say, wasn't that the show you said that, you know, when they brought it back to Netflix, that they should have just, they let it die because the last season was so terrible?
It wasn't terrible. This is the issue, right? It was extremely creative from a production standpoint because they weren't able to get the entire cast together at the same time because when you're shooting a network sitcom, you lock them down with contracts for the year so they can't do other projects. But this isn't a traditional network sitcom anymore because it's on Netflix. So they did what they could and worked with people's schedules and created a non-conventional story with the way they told it. So they told the same events from different perspectives.
Yeah.
It was creative that way, but if they're not going to do it the way traditional Arrested Development was, why do it? And weren't they building towards a movie? Wasn't that the entire point of season 4? Or is season 5 just going to be them trying to film the movie or dealing with the consequences of a movie being filmed about them? And then eventually we'll have a meta movie about Arrested Development.
A movie about a season of a movie about a movie?
Right.
My head hurts.
I agree with Justin. There are some things that I love that just need to stop.
We talked about this with Firefly, too.
Yes. I loved the original seasons of Arrested Development. And if it had been picked up sooner and they had gotten it back together, they probably would have had another successful two or three seasons. But the fact is, it didn't happen. It was canceled. Let's enjoy it for what it was, reminisce, and that's part of enjoying it. Having this constant reminder of what it used to be, and then having this sort of semi-good, semi-terrible versions are not helping. They're not good. They're not cathartic in any way.
But don't we get to hold on to the idea of Arrested Development? Isn't this the same thing as repeating the Patriots are cheaters? We're repeating that Arrested Development is awful, and if we believe and clap our hands enough, Tinkerbell will grow wings?
To a certain degree, yes, it is very similar. It's wanting reality to be something other than it is.
Which actually gives us the perfect transition to our next major story. Every once in a while on television, a show comes along that people say you have to watch. It's epic. No, it's amazing.
Right. You got to do it right. You know, sometimes in the world, there is a television show that everyone says you have to watch.
Wow, I think we're going to have a new segment. And it's Elliot does movie trailers, true movie trailers or something. That was pretty good.
Now you try it, but like deeper.
It's not going to happen. I just get really loud and squeaky. That's what I do. That's my thing. All right. This television show this past year was True Detective. Except recently, claims of plagiarism on the part of the creator, Nick Pizzolatto. Is that how you say his name?
Pizzolatto. You're the Italian.
Yeah, Pizzolatto. That's it. I couldn't remember how it was spelled. Yeah, so Nick Pizzolatto, the creator of True Detective, has been accused of plagiarism. It came out on this site, lovecraftzine.com, and I'm going to read a couple quotes from this that really show the level of plagiarism they're accusing him of. The most egregious instance of Pizzolatto's plagiarism involves some of the most captivating and most quoted of all scenes from the series, namely the car ride in episode 1 in which Russ Cole outlines his pessimistic, antinatalist worldview definitively and powerfully. It is a fact that, in that crucial character-defining scene, almost every one of Russ's infamous lines is either taken word for word or as a paraphrase of Ligotti's distinctive prose and ideas from The Conspiracy Against the Human Race. Bear in mind, as well, that this scene is the linchpin of Cole's character, and it is the scene in which True Detective goes from being just another buddy cop procedural to something different, something of exceeding interest to HBO's audience, and a credit to the writer who created Rustin Cole. Next quote. HBO was sold upon reading the scripts for the first two episodes of the show, the episodes in which the lifting from Ligotti's work is by far the most common. In fact, the drafts of the script they saw were often more rife with plagiarism of Ligotti's work than even the final product was. What's interesting to me here is these supposedly plagiarized quotes are the reason I didn't want to watch the show to begin with. I heard about how good this show was, and then they had all these quotes about that character talking about how humans are supernatural and they don't deserve to live and life is an illusion and the self is an illusion and human life is just suffering. And I was like, why do I want to watch this?
Yeah, something with such an outright evil philosophy. Why would you want to engage in that?
And these quotes are even saying that. This article is even saying that that's what made the show go to the next level, besides just being like The Killing, where it's two cops trying to figure out who killed people.
Yeah. Because they're deep, man. Totally deep.
So, of course, Pizzolatto, the creator, and HBO responded. This is Pizzolatto's response. Nothing in the television True Detective was plagiarized. The philosophical thoughts expressed by Russ Cole did not represent any thought or idea unique to any one author. Rather, these are the philosophical tenets of a pessimistic, antinatalist philosophy with a historic tradition including Arthur Schopenhauer, Friedrich Nietzsche, E.M. Cioran, and various other philosophers, all of whom express these ideas. As an autodidact pessimist, Cole speaks toward that philosophy with erudition, and in his own words, the ideas within this philosophy are certainly not exclusive to any writer.
That's even worse. That's worse. That means right. That people believe that shit.
Right, and it seems to me his argument is that I'm not the plagiarist, the character is. Isn't that what he's saying?
Lots of writers have this idea. Like, well, if that's true, then no wonder literature is going down the toilet.
Well, actually, that's a really good point, Elliot, that I hadn't thought of. This just proves that the show isn't anything new or unique. It's just in the same, as you said earlier, echo chamber. It's repeating of the same sort of, Dan, I know you love this show, but the same sort of nihilism that exists in a House of Cards or a Dexter.
Yeah, I wouldn't argue that House of Cards isn't nihilistic, per se. It'll depend on how the last season wraps up overall, but the thing that really, so there are two things here. One is I think that Pizzolatto is correct that these ideas per se aren't exclusive to Ligotti or exclusive to any one writer, and so, you know, his character isn't plagiarizing. But on the other hand, if you look at the specific word choice, and that's what it's about here, not about the overall concepts, because you can't copyright certain concepts, but you can copyright certain arrangements of words. And there are specific words that he uses in his script that are directly ripped off from Ligotti. The one that I specifically mention is when he uses the imagery of the thresher in talking about humanity. The character and Ligotti both basically use that metaphor and in almost the exact same words. That, to me, smacks of official, hands down, no question about it, plagiarism.
Right. If we're defining it in the academic sense, it's definitely academic definition of plagiarism. But it's just plagiarism in general that he's definitely ripping this guy off. He can claim it's a tradition of a bunch of writers and thinkers in the history, but he's ripping them off. There's nothing original about this, which makes HBO's statement even more ridiculous. This is what HBO said. True Detective is a work of exceptional originality, and the story, plot, characters, and dialogue are that of Nick Pizzolatto. Philosophical concepts are free for anyone to use, including writers of fiction, and there have been many such examples in the past. Exploring and engaging with ideas and themes that philosophers and novelists have wrestled with over time is one of the show's many strengths. We stand by the show, its writing, and Nick Pizzolatto entirely.
Philosophical concepts are free for anyone to use. That's an interesting statement, I think.
Well, to compare this back to something like Lost, which did in fact borrow heavily from multiple philosophical concepts, but it never repeated those concepts in the words of the philosophers who wrote them down.
And it also gave you internal references. And what I mean by that is John Locke was doing the philosophy of John Locke, and he was named John Locke. So it's not like they were saying, hey, this is an original character they came up with. We're saying, this guy represents John Locke, and we're being very clear with you that it represents John Locke. And Sawyer read The Fountainhead. So if Sawyer was representative of Rourke, they had him reading The Fountainhead to reference that fact. They were being intellectually honest.
Yes, absolutely. But, yeah, and the greater point, I think, is that they explored those philosophical concepts in their consequences for the characters, not in specifically what the characters said, but just in having the characters follow the ideological consequences of those concepts, which is what was genius about it in a certain sense, versus this, where you're literally ripping off almost full paragraphs of written text. That's not original, it's not interesting, and in fact, it's immoral.
Right, and the fact that HBO calls this exceptionally original, is this just a case where they have to stand by this cash cow?
Probably, yeah.
Yes, I think so.
Speaking of shows that could have a good philosophical bent, but probably won't, Lifetime is developing a Marilyn Monroe miniseries. The story says on Variety, the series, based on the book The Secret Life of Marilyn Monroe by Randy J. Tarabarelli. Did someone just decide, like, Italian writers are the best writers all of a sudden? Like,
here's your time.
Do I need to take my mom's maiden name here so I can suddenly get attention? Like, Jesus. Is being scripted by Stephen Cornish, writer and producer of Reels, The Kennedys, and 24. If the project is picked up, Sherry Babyhelmer, Lori Collier is attached to direct. The show hails from Asylum Entertainment, which produced The Kennedys, and then it talks about the executive producers, and the working title for the miniseries is called Marilyn. And then it says about the book, Secret Life Biography is a New York Times bestseller, which explores Monroe's complicated relationships with her mother, foster mother, and legal guardian, her struggles with mental illness, and her ties with the Kennedys. So what do we think of this?
I'm interested. I mean, I'm a gay man. Of course I'm going to be watching a Marilyn Monroe miniseries. It's going to happen.
Should we just re-theme this episode, the Elliot is gay episode?
No, we should save that. Save it for like another. But it looks interesting, you know? I don't know.
No, I actually think, I think Marilyn is one of the figures that actually transcends, sexuality. I think straight men would also be interested in watching a Marilyn Monroe miniseries, even if it's on Lifetime. I think this is a really smart move on Lifetime's part because this is a subject matter that has such a broad appeal.
Now, I don't necessarily disagree with you, but the question I have is exactly what you just said about the transcending sexuality. I want to know what direction this is going to take because, as we know, and you know, this can be a way of informing you, the viewer, Ayn Rand wrote a famous column in the LA Times about her when she died. And the whole idea of it was she was very joyous, Marilyn Monroe, and that her mental health issues were a result of when she got to the top, she didn't understand why that joy of life wasn't among the elite in society either. When she was on the bottom, she was trying to escape it, and when she got to the top, she couldn't escape it. And that's what eventually destroyed her, was Ayn Rand's argument. So my question is, are they actually going to take this perspective where they portray that? Or are they just going to portray her as the common perception, which is this over-sexualized being who is trying to deal with her flawed nature as a animal, basically?
I think that's an excellent question, and it's certainly yet to be seen. I haven't read this book. I didn't know this book existed, but I haven't heard anything about it. Elliot, have you heard anything about this book that might give us some insight?
I haven't read the book, but I will say that the few times that people have tried to do anything regarding Marilyn Monroe, they've done the latter scenario that Justin has talked about. Because, I mean, to encapsulate a sense of life, or to portray someone who embodies a sense of life that is contradictory to the modern culture, I just don't find it to be very likely.
Right, and that's the thing about Monroe. Like, I don't know much about her, so I don't know if Rand was right or not when she talks about Monroe. But I do know that the way Monroe is remembered is not somebody who loved life. She's remembered as a sexual rebel, as someone who said, oh, well, women can do what they want. Basically, she was the Sex in the City before Sex in the City. That's how people see her. I'm not saying that's right or wrong. I'm simply that's saying how the culture remembers her.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, there's anything... Sorry, go ahead, Elliot.
No, I was going to say the sexy without the happy. That's all.
Right, exactly, 100%.
I was going to say, if there's anything that then makes me hopeful for this documentary, if that is the common perspective, is that I think Lifetime, as a network, whether or not they realize if this is a good thing or not, are going to want to take a non-traditional view of that. Especially because they're going to be defending a certain feminist worldview, which in this case actually might end up being a really good thing.
Yeah, so Lifetime, they're doing some unique things now. They're trying to be creative, so we'll see what they come up with this.
Yeah.
This episode's all about hysteria, so it wouldn't be a Yahoo Answers Answers segment if we didn't take on some of the biggest hysterias in our culture.
Just another question. Just another answer, I won't pick it. And just another question. Just another answer,
first question.
I won't pick it.
Had a panic attack over current Ebola outbreak in Africa? Question mark? Now, I don't think that, I think this is meant as a statement. I don't think when people write in these questions, they realize that Yahoo Answers automatically puts a question at the end. So they're not asking us if we had a panic attack. They're saying they did. So here is what they wrote. Okay, so I had a nightmare about a disease epidemic and woke up having a panic attack. Is anyone else paranoid or terrified about this? Or do you just think it's media hysteria like so many other incurable diseases in the past? I've been doing research, and though the fatality rate can vary from 25 to 90%, the disease doesn't seem to transmit to others easily. So far, the outbreak's been going on for, I think, 4 to 5 months, and only 1,700 cases have been found, and 943 have died. And that's over 4 countries where the population are over 193 million. Plus, I've read that we're very well equipped in America for outbreaks, especially since we've been researching live strains here for years in quarantine with no incident. There's also a lot of reasons, they spelled it with an I, so I got confused. I was like, there's a lot of raisins? For the large outbreak, being this is the first time it's made its way to West Africa, which has poor sanitary conditions and dense populations. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you're allowed to say that, even on the internet. That's, you're walking dangerous grounds here, questioner. And with the locals not cooperating with the very limited medical aid workers, I think has worsened efforts to prevent spread. I've also read that there are experimental drugs that were recently, so I don't know if like the people were very resentful when they tested these, tested on 2 infected doctors that are already showing signs of improvement, plus a bunch of other vaccines in the works. They've also sent millions of dollars to help contain the virus and have stopped airline travel in the most affected countries. So despite all of this reassuring information, should I still be panicking and afraid? Update. I think it may be because I've been reading a bunch of paranoid comments on news articles.
Oh, Jesus Christ. He's done all this fucking first-hand research. That say, it's fine, it's fine, it's fine, stop worrying, it's fine. And then he goes and reads some fucking comments on a news article. Talk about completely contradictory.
But isn't that what we were saying all the way back to the Patriots are cheaters thing with Kerry Williams? Where all of this first-hand knowledge exists. And you can research it, right? All of this objective, external to, you know, any person, not first-hand, external to any person information. But there are people who repeat it, and that makes it seem true because on a human level, on an emotional level, if somebody keeps repeating something as if it's true over and over again and they believe it so strongly, doesn't part of you want to say, oh, well, if they're saying it so strongly, there's got to be something going on. And isn't right. that what internet commenters do? Isn't that why people are obsessed with being internet commenters like this?
Mm-hmm. Yes, because there is some sway to it in terms of people are persuaded by what they see as other people believing. So if there's a mass of other people who say something and you look at yourself and you say, I don't believe that, you start to doubt yourself if other
right.
people say it.
Like, I wish I could have felt what people say they felt about Guardians of the Galaxy. But I didn't. But the fact that they say they felt it, I'm like, well, why can they feel it and I can't?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's like in the Fountainhead, you know, when they go when they're talking about the plays, the really obscene plays on stage, and the how regular people were like, oh, like, you know, this is terrible, but all the sophisticated people think it's really good, so maybe we should just rely on them because we don't know what's good for us or not. And that's really what it comes down to.
Right, and these yeah. commenters, right, when she's talking about she's reading all of this stuff, and even the news media, right? You know who's the worst with this? CNN. They did it with the plane crashes, and now they're doing it with Ebola. The only time I see CNN is when I'm at the gym, because they have it on, for some reason, they have it on in the locker room. I've been going to this gym for almost 2 years, and only once, literally one day, has ESPN been on in the locker room when I went in there. Every other day at CNN, and it's always Anderson Cooper with some scare tactic. Usually, yeah. it's the airline stuff, those plane crashes, but now it's been Ebola as of late. So it's not just commenters, it's CNN as well and other news sources where they do this. They repeat it over and over again to somehow make it true.
Right, and even if the story they repeated over and over again was Ebola is perfectly contained and you will not get it, the fact that they just repeat that over and over again makes people think there's some danger.
Right.
Yep.
And what do you think of this whole Ebola thing? Let's talk about Ebola specifically.
Okay. So I'm not a scientist, but I have done some research into it because I think it was frightening enough that I needed to educate myself to some degree about it. And basically after doing just minor research, reading about the disease itself and transmission rates and stuff, I am 100% not worried about getting Ebola. Like the comment, like the questioner says, the transmission rate is not very high. You basically have to come in blood contact, like blood to blood contact with it. And as long as you're not traveling to a country that's highly affected, there's basically no worry about it, in my opinion.
Right, so I kind of have a similar perspective to you did. I didn't do any research, but my thought was, if this becomes so bad of a plague that me going outside in California when the thing started in West Africa and they flew the guy to, like, the CDC in Atlanta and they flew someone else to North Carolina or whatever, if that it gets to that point that I get infected that way, there's nothing – I was going to get infected anyway. There's nothing I can do. But if it's in West Africa, it's in Georgia, it's in North Carolina, and it's just one or two cases, what am I worried about?
Yes. Mm-hmm. The one thing I will say about this virus that I learned is that this virus is actually kind of sophisticated and in a little ways kind of cool. Now, that's horrible because it makes people die a very painful death. But my point is that this virus evolved so that it doesn't know, but it is sort of evolved such that because its transmission rate is so low, the last symptom of this virus is that the second to last symptom is you basically bleed out of every orifice in your body. And then the last symptom is that you have violent seizures that throws the blood everywhere. Isn't that cool?
It is cool. And if you look at the diseases, and this is my argument about curing diseases, is there will always be one that's worse because they get, as you said, more sophisticated. If you look at the diseases that are really big right now that we can't solve, they're all kind of cool in that way. You know, like you just said about Ebola. If you look at cancer, cancer is basically cells where the code has broken down and they reproduce and they're just non-coded cells. So they're useless cells. That's pretty cool. And AIDS actually attacks you on a DNA level.
Yeah, fucking cool. Go Ebola. I mean,
just a disclaimer. We don't mean to support any of these diseases and what they do. All diseases should be eradicated. We're just saying from a purely observational standpoint. Uh-huh. Next question. A zombie survival class? Question mark. Really? And I think they mean recently. I saw an advertisement in the newspaper, two words, offering classes on zombie survival. Really? Are people buying into this? I mean, it was like $400 for a week on class on how to survive if zombies attack. What's wrong with people? They are not real! They said it in all caps, that's why I said that.
Thank you. I thought they were an old person sending an email.
This might have been an old person on Yahoo Answers. But this is like, do you guys ever watch The Talking Dead after Walking Dead airs?
No, absolutely not.
They do a segment on this that I absolutely hate. And they have a guy who's a zombie survivalist. And he gives tips on what to do in the zombie apocalypse. For instance, wrap your arms in duct tape. Wear a long hooded sweatshirt and then wrap that in duct tape so you can hold your arm out and zombies will bite into it rather than bite your arm. And it just annoys me because I'm like, we could be talking about the show right now.
Well, I mean, this is so stupid. So I've met these people that take this seriously and have like zombie preparedness kits. And I always, like, I think, are they really serious or are they just really committed to the joke?
So are they hipsters or not?
Right. Like, do they actually think there is some vague possibility that zombies will come from fiction to reality? Or are they long-term pranksters on themselves?
Well, you know, I mean, as a capitalist, I have to say, if somebody becomes successful at charging $400 for a weekend course on zombie survival, more power to them. That's okay.
Really? You think it's okay to make money off of other people's delusions? You don't think that there's something messed up about that you're making money off of a break from reality?
But
no, churches do it all the time. Why can't somebody do it?
I knew he was going there.
But churches are immoral.
But what I'm saying is that people do it a lot, and as long as he's not defrauding them in a real actual sense. Like you said, this is a survival course for zombies. If you don't know that zombies don't exist, it's your own fucking fault. It's not the fault of anybody else. It's not the fault of the guy. You're the deluded one. You should be parted with your money.
And again, like, is this something people are paying because they think it's kind of fun and funny to take it seriously? I don't know. Or are they honestly trying to survive some non-existent apocalypse? That's my point.
Yeah, I mean, when I went to Vegas last Christmas, there was a zombie survival store there. I don't know if it's still there or not. But when I went in, there was nothing really there. And that's how I kind of feel about this whole craze about, like, zombie survival hysteria. I went in there and they had a couple animatronic displays, and then they sold some stuff that said zombies on it, and then they had a firearm store connected to it. So maybe it was all to just get to people to buy guns. Because that's still legal in Las Vegas. But I just felt like it was, like Elliot was saying, trying to capitalize on all of this. And it could have been cool if they went the direction of, we know this is fake and we're just going to make a big show of it like everything else in Vegas. But it seemed like they were walking that line.
Yes. That's the weird part to me.
Well, they're probably trying to appeal to both. The people who know that it's a joke and the people who might actually believe in it. But again, it's not their fault. If people come to them with these delusions, you know, they want to make a living and they make a living off of it.
But aren't they perpetuating it is the problem.
Huh?
Aren't they perpetuating it? Isn't that the problem?
I'm perpetuating it? I don't know. I don't think so.
It's a tough question. I think it's a tough question because there are many things that are like that in our culture. Like, for instance, are the purveyors of... So, not that I hold this opinion, but someone once argued with me that the people who make Coca-Cola are immoral because they make something that they know is basically bad for people in almost any quantity, and people are going to consume it in mass quantities, and they know that and encourage it. So would someone who is a genuinely moral capitalist want to make something they know is bad for people?
Yeah, but there's a difference here between Coca-Cola and this, right? To genuinely believe that the zombie apocalypse is going to happen or is a concern that you have to prepare for is a break from reality. It is a mental issue. There's already a health issue there. With something like Coca-Cola, it's not an exacerbating problem. It's not a long-term problem. So when you drink Coke, okay, maybe it's not great for you, but from that perspective that they're arguing, everything kills you in life. So you're just making a choice of how fast or how quickly or how slowly you want something to kill you. So Coca-Cola is no different from any other product from that perspective. But in this case, it's not something killing you slowly or quickly or not. You're already broken from reality and somebody is making money off of that.
Yes, potentially. I mean, I think that there is a difference, definitely qualitatively. I'm just saying that the argument comes up about whether or not it is the purveyor's moral responsibility to decide if what they're producing is good for the customer who demands it.
Right, and I think it is, but in the case of Coca-Cola, they're saying the enjoyment you get from drinking a can of Coke is greater than the harm it causes to your body. I think that would be Coca-Cola's argument.
Yeah, I guess you could make maybe not that exact argument, but a similar argument around the zombie survival people, which is that, say, for instance, the peace of mind they get from satisfying this preparedness versus if they had a genuine paranoia that wasn't being satisfied makes these stores either amoral or even moral.
But it's the old principle of caveat emptor, you know? Yes. Buyer beware. Let the buyer beware. It's on the buyer, the people who are spending the money, to be rational, to spend their money wisely. And if they're not rational, if they bought into this delusion, that's not the fault of people who see a need in the market and want to contribute to it. You know what I mean? Like it's on the people spending the money, not the people who are creating the value and earning the money.
Well, I just think I take a more balanced approach where you can take the perspective where it's all the consumer's responsibility to make sure what they're buying is good. And you can take the perspective, which is the more common perspective in our culture, that it's the company or the seller who it's their responsibility to make sure it's good. You know, that's why everyone says we're being oppressed by capitalism, right? Because they think it's all the responsibility of the companies. But I think it's more of a balanced approach. I think companies should honestly try to create values and honestly believe in the product they're saying and saying, hey, I am making something that the world will be better because I've created it. Now, I'm not telling them how to define better, and I'm not saying they have an obligation to the greater culture. I'm just saying that it's like, as a writer, I'm not going to write something that I know is going to sell because I know people will buy it. I'm going to write something that I believe is genuinely good, and if people want to buy it, it will make their life better.
You're not going to write zombie teen vampire fantasy porn?
Right. Do you see what I'm talking about with the balance?
Yeah, but so this is going on for a very long time. Which means it's actually a good Yahoo Answers question. Thank you, writer. I was going to say, so what if the person who opens the store is one of the people who is a zombie survivalist who thinks that he is providing a genuine value?
Okay, you got me there. Then yes, I'm fine with it. In that instance, I am fine with it. Okay, you've won me over with that argument.
That's not even a convincing argument on my end, by the way, but...
That's not even because, a what argument?
Because now we're getting into really technical economic philosophy, which is that there's, I think Ayn Rand called it something and then maybe some other authors have called it something else. So basically it's philosophically objectively valuable versus socially objectively valuable. And if this person is opening the store because they genuinely believe in it and there's a market for it, that's socially objectively valuable because there is a market demand for it, but it's not philosophically objectively valuable because they're not actually responding to anything in reality.
Right, but if we're talking about if the person's good or not, then the person isn't there's a problem with the person, right? But they're assuming they're trying their hardest to be as good of a person as they can, which I'm going to allow, and I'm going to accept that because I'm trying to accept Pendulette's benevolent view of people, then I'm going to say that, you know, okay, maybe he's made an error in reasoning, but errors in reasoning aren't enough to make a person a bad person. So he's still a good person even if he's made errors, which I'm sure I make errors all the time, but that doesn't make me a bad person.
Well, it's left to be seen. But, yes.
All right. Speaking of irrational paranoia about things that aren't really going on, next question. Are you fed up with global warming propaganda? I am. Again with the caps lock.
Yay!
And this question actually doesn't come from America, so it's good to see that this is spreading.
Holy hell.
Yeah. I sat down last night to watch some TV when I turned on one channel. On the channel selected was ABC. Parentheses. Australia. So it must be the Australian broadcasting company.
IBC, mate.
I love how, like, we have Marvel DC. Wouldn't you love to see ABC versus ABC? One's Crocodile Dundee. Who would the ABC America person be?
Oh, God. Like, Brian Williams or some nonsense?
Yeah, that'd be awesome. Anyway, it was showing a program called Tipping Points, which was about, from the little I watch, climate change causing droughts in the Amazon, and how the Amazon was liable to suffer extreme wildfires. Parentheses. How come they're so sure global warming will cause droughts? Don't ask questions. So I turned over to watch Discovery. Parentheses. I like natural history programs. That was showing a documentary on African savannas and how climate change was impacting the herbivores that live there. Am I supposed to say herbivores, though, with an H because it's Australia?
Yes.
Okay. Herbivores that live there. All the studies that I have read indicate that CO2 is increasing vegetation in savannas and arid regions. And then I love the way this ends, right? Ended up watching sports instead. And that's why we are moving right towards the NFL season.
Oh, applause. Applause, sir. Well done. Okay, so before we talk about this question in specific, if America gets 20% worse, let's say, I'm moving to Australia because they're getting radically better very fast. They privatized their post office. They ended all farm subsidies. And by the way, their farm business is now booming bigger than ever in history. And they've just recently gotten rid of all of their global warming nonsense, like their carbon taxes and all that oppressive global warming regulation shit. So, just saying that there may be a bastion for us to go to if the U.S. continues down this retarded path.
Gulch, but down under. There you go.
Yes. Yeah, we're going to go to the former prison colony, right?
Exactly. This is a Heinlein novel in the making at the moment.
Yeah, I mean,
that out.
This is the reason Australia is on my top of list of countries I want to visit. Because I want to see what the culture really is like. Because I see these cultural trends coming out of it. I'd like to see the actual concrete reality of it, actuality of it.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think addressing the question specifically, I think any listener to this podcast will know that I think me specifically and all of us in general are very tired of global warming, climate change, climate disruption, propaganda, nonsense. But it's not going away.
This goes back to the repeating thing, right? So last summer, it's actually about a year ago now, I was at the Smithsonian. And they have, you know, their natural history museum and everything, right? And in it, there's a wing that has the chart of global warming over the history, or the global temperature over the history of mankind. Right? Mm-hmm. Or since we've been measuring it. And if you look at the chart, this is in the Smithsonian, right? This is in the nation's capital. And you look at the difference from when they started measuring to now, which we're talking like maybe 300 years max, the difference is maybe a couple degrees warmer.
Yeah.
I was there with my cousins and their kids who are like 8 and 12 or something, or maybe a little younger than that. And I looked at it and I went over to them. And I looked at this chart and I said, How can you look at this and accept anyone arguing for global warming? It's right here. And my two cousins looked at me and they were like, we wish there were just more people like you saying this loudly around. But the problem is, you know who donated the wing?
Who?
The Koch brothers.
Oh.
So what are people going to say about this graphic?
It's Koch money.
Right. So this goes back to the repetition thing, right? It's been repeated enough that the Koch brothers are evil and they're not in line with reality and they're just trying to deceive and take advantage of people, that anyone who sees that, who disagrees with it, is just going to blame it on that.
Right. So using the numbers that the global warming fanatics choose, even using their numbers of global mean temperature data, in the past 35 years, we have seen a total of 1/3 of 1 degree Celsius increase in average global temperature, which is not enough to do fuck anything.
And how do you know? How do you know that's not a statistical deviation, a normal statistical deviation? You don't have enough data over the development of mankind, of the Earth, to know what a normal temperature fluctuation is.
I 100% agree with you. My point is simply that using the data that they want to use, their collected statistical data, and the article I just read says that you can, so if you choose the last 17 years, for instance, there's been absolutely no warming, and if you choose the past 15 years, there's actually been a slight cooling, but if you choose 35 years, which is considered the prime period of warming in human history, there has been 1/3 of 1 degree Celsius on average, with huge fluctuations and no warming for the past 17 years.
Okay, I want to ask you this, Daniel. Elliot, this probably doesn't apply to you because you were born in when? What year were you born? 90s?
1984.
Oh, you were born 84? I thought you were a lot younger than us.
No.
Oh, okay, good then. So I will ask both of you this question. I was born in 83.
Yeah.
And I remember, because that means I was in like preschool and elementary school a bit in the 80s. I remember being taught about, for a year or two, about the coming ice age. Does anyone else remember that?
Yeah, we would read old weekly readers. I don't know if you remember these things, but they were basically like newspapers for kids in school. And our school was remarkably poor, so we read old ones. And there were a ton of articles about the hole in the ozone layer and its connection with chlorofluorocarbons that we're putting into the air and how that's going to bring us into the next ice age.
Right, exactly.
There was a lot about greenhouse. I remember a lot about greenhouse effect, the greenhouse gases, things like that. I think the other thing I remember mainly from that time, from when I was in school, because I went to most of my elementary school years were in the start of the 90s. So there was a huge push towards like recycling, you know, Captain Planet and the Planeteers was on TV. Mm-hmm. Like that. So that's what I mainly remember.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. But as I alluded to, this is not going anywhere. In fact, I think it's going to get a lot worse before it gets any better in America. We're going to go through a whole period of environmental shaming where people who own big cars are going to be called out in public, and where if you're wasting electricity and such, you're going to be called out in public, and it's going to be a huge moral mess before it gets any better.
Yep, just chanting and chanting and chanting.
Yep.
Speaking of things that are chanted, mm-hmm, over and over as if it somehow makes things true, when maybe I have to teach Elliot again, or maybe Elliot's finally understanding what I'm saying. Next question. Are these hashtags where women complain about how oppressed and abused they are constructive and useful?
Probably not.
Now, before we go into this and I read all of these, because this question is basically just a list of ones that they've picked out, I just want to be clear that we are not against women who are actually oppressed and abused speaking out against it.
Right, like women in Palestine.
Right.
Under the rule of Hamas.
Or
just going to point that out there.
Palestine if it actually existed.
Dan, you lived here. I know you lived here, right? In Orange County.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm crazy, but it seems like more and more of these people are coming over here, and all of the women are wearing these burqas all the time. It's fucking 80 to 100 degrees, and they're in these full garbs. Or they're wearing the headgear. And I don't understand it. I'm like, you're in America. You can wear what you want. You're also in Orange County where the women generally don't wear very much clothing. Why are you wearing that?
I like how they're wearing burkas and headgear as if they have poor orthodontia.
You know what I mean. But sometimes they just wear the head part of it.
Right. Yeah. No, I completely saw that. And both my girlfriend and I, my girlfriend is at least grew up in the Muslim culture if she's not religious anymore. But we both have a very strong emotional reaction to seeing those people as if, and I don't know what their emotional reaction is. I don't think I've identified it for myself, at least. It's almost like pity, I guess, but mixed with anger. I don't know.
As somebody who feels this often, you're incensed about somebody allowing themselves to be harmed.
Yeah.
That's what it is. I feel this all the time. And I know because I have the same emotional reaction to seeing these people. I want to go up to them and go, why? But I know it's not productive because they're going to tell me I'm the one being oppressive by asking why. But that is what you're feeling. I know that because, as you say, justice seems to be my touchstone emotion or touchstone principle. And I feel this all the time. Like, that's what I feel at the same time when somebody is a bad driver. And I'm like, why? You're only hurting yourself. You're not hurting. You're not helping yourself like you think you are. You're hurting yourself. Or like the woman in the store with the kid, the Burger King thing we read. I feel for the guy who did it because I feel incensed that she's harming herself and thinks she doesn't need to be talked to. So that's what it is. That's what you're feeling.
And harming your kid.
Yeah. Right. But anyway, let's get to this question. So it's basically women going online to complain that they've been stalked, abused, and insulted, even molested and raped. And interestingly, they star the A in raped. By men on what sounds like a daily basis for some of these women. This happened to these women every day, apparently. Once again, caps. Here are some tweets on this. Apparently the hashtag is not just hello. Women are being grabbed, followed, threatened, and we're supposed to pretend that's a compliment. Hashtag not just hello. If you feel entitled to me, my attention, or my space, it's not simply flirting. Hashtag not just hello. Memo to whiny guys and hashtag not just hello. Flirting isn't something you do with strangers, but in a context where it's clear that it's welcome. All right, I'm going to stop there for a second. This is something that I struggled with for so long when I was young. This is why I did nothing in college, and I talked to no one and talked to no girls in college. Because I had this idea in my head that the woman first had to give me some permission in order to express interest in her or express that I viewed her as desirable.
Yes.
And that never comes unless that give – it only comes if they have all the power and they can say, I'm interested in you. Now go ahead and say something. But that completely makes it so you are never going to find a woman who's interested in you. Because people don't just go up to each other and say those things to each other, men or women. Or if a man does that, there's something wrong with him.
Right. In fact, I'm going to relay a quick story here. I was just talking with a good friend of mine who's getting married to someone, and I'll leave out the names for now. But the point is that he was a person who was a little bit afraid to express sexual interest in women. And maybe it's his pathology. Maybe it's the culture. I don't know who to blame. But the point
is—that's what I was talking about. So I just want to be clear that. Even though I was saying that, Daniel's not talking about me right now.
No, I'm not talking
about you. But that's the same pathology.
Yeah.
That's the fear I'm talking about.
But this is the woman that now, in retrospect, now he is going to marry and is the love of his life. But they very nearly broke up because he was so afraid to make any sexual advance that she, after like 4 or 5 dates, assumed that he didn't want to be with her sexually.
Right.
So she just talked to him and said, well, I guess we can be friends if you want, because clearly you're not interested in me. And he, of course, had no idea how to respond because he was interested in her sexually, but he felt like he couldn't say anything about it.
Right. And that's something that you integrate without realizing it. And I actually had girls say stuff like that to me before, that there was no quote unquote spark. That lack of spark, quote unquote, is a, you know, that's a murky way to say it. It's non-objective. But what they're referring to is me not acting in line with what I was actually feeling and thinking. So they weren't feeling any interest from me, even though I thought I was expressing it, because I had no idea how to properly express it.
Yes. And just thinking about the actual real life consequences of this for a minute. Because that's the first, so I've always thought about it abstractly. But this guy I know and this woman are immensely perfect for each other. Mm-hmm. And they're insanely happy together. But they almost did not connect because he was too afraid to actually make a sexual move.
Mm-hmm.
So the real life consequences of what these women are advocating for are potentially devastating, both for them and potential male partners with whom they could have an incredible life together.
Elliot, is this making more sense to you now?
Yeah, it's. I'm just listening. No, but there's been a lot of these hashtags going on Twitter lately, and the feminists really are up in force. They're out in force for some reason.
All right, let's read a few more.
For months now.
Yep, they it's the echo chamber, right? Repeat things on the internet over and over again, and it'll become true. So let's read a few more. Incessantly followed and eventually cornered, whether at a nightclub or on the street, grabbed at a bus stop after saying no. Hashtag not just hello. There's no pretense on the guy's side that it's about anything but establishing and confirming power. A compliance check. Hashtag not just hello.
Interesting.
If you read hashtag not just hello, you're more concerned with men's feelings than women's safety. You're a danger to all women's safety.
Yes, for heaven forbid men get an advocate. Somebody to speak up for men.
If you're a man who never harassed a woman, don't go bragging to us. Call out the men that do. Hashtag not just hello. I wear headphones and read books on the train. A guy pulled my headphones off to discuss my book with me. Hashtag not just hello. Hashtag not just hello. If it becomes stuck up slag, I'll cut your legs off and no one will see you again because you didn't return their attention.
Oh, God.
Now, some of these incidents, like the guy on the train and the guy saying this thing about cutting their legs off, like, whoever did that, those are fucked up people. But do they really represent all men?
No.
Of course not.
I don't think they represent a tiny plurality of men. Because I ride a train to and from work every day. I probably see 350 people a day on these trains. And I'm not one of those people who just sort of zones out and sits on the train. I actually am an avid people watcher. This never happens. I'm not even going to say that I've seen it happen once. I used to do this commute every day for 2.5 years. It never happened. Ever.
Now, could these people be from Europe, and does it happen more frequently in Europe? We don't know, right?
Right. Now, I'm not... Look...
I mean, I guess in Japan this is more frequent because of how packed it is, I guess, and how sexually repressed it is. The men are much more, like, grabby on those trains.
Yeah, I believe that. And I don't mean to say before I get unnecessary hate mail as opposed to the necessary hate mail.
As opposed to the kind you invite purposely.
Right, exactly. I'm not saying that women they're not harassed or they're not raped or whatever. But we have this whole culture where basically if a guy now looks at a girl and she assumes his intentions are negative, that is rape.
Well, right, and that's actually something I wanna touch on here for a second. So, have either of you read The Psychology of Self-Esteem by Nathaniel Brandon?
Yes. It's a phenomenal book.
Right, and there was one thing that helped me clear up a lot of this, you know, this pathology you were talking about with your friend. And, you know, this thing I was dealing with about, you know, not being able to express interest because I felt like I needed permission from the woman because otherwise I felt like I was being mean to her, or being oppressive, or it was unwanted. Mm-hmm. And the part I'm referring to is when he talks about the psychology of sexuality, which was very, very interesting to me, where he talks about the physical act is actually, no matter what you do, the man will always be the one penetrating the woman just by the design of the biology. Now, that's not saying the woman can't be on top or in control during the act, but even during that action, when she's in control, the man is still going inside of the woman. Therefore, that creates certain psychological repercussions in the man and in the woman and in men and women in general with the way they interact with each other. Isn't all of this just a response to not being able to sort of accept that? And is that assertion by Brandon true?
Is that insertion by Brandon true? Well, this show went somewhere weird really quickly.
This concludes mid-time.
And canceled.
I want to be the first podcast canceled by the internet. I want that on my resume.
I think that, yes, there is something about the biological that necessarily translates to the psychological. And I think the feminists are well aware of that. And in fact, when you look at, just like in any ideology, it's basically an extreme of who's the most consistent in that, ideology. And there is a branch of feminism that is remarkably consistent in that they declare that all penetration is rape. Period. You can look this up. They're very real, and they're actually a growing sect of feminism. So they understand exactly what you're talking about, which is that in the act of sex, there is some aggression, and that aggression is, according to them, necessarily rape.
Right, so, and that's the problem. That's what I'm saying. That's the logical... I mean, at least they're, like you said, they're being honest, because that's the logical consequence of everything these people are saying, right?
Yes. It is. It is the most consistent view of that ideology that
right.
I've seen.
Because here's the thing, right? Men and women, right? And I'm going to quote Ann Coulter here, which is going to, you know...
Oh, Jesus.
Where she said, I'll gladly take 20 cents less on the dollar to never have to face the fear of rejection. Now, you know, forget the economic thing for a second. The point she's making is the difference between men and women, right? I'm a dude, so if that's the way psychology is, then I have a responsibility to myself to act a certain way and be a little more aggressive and assertive than women have to be. But that's who I am. That's how I was born. Don't you think to a certain extent it would have been easier to be born a woman and just have to look really awesome and be really awesome, and just simply being awesome will make people want to talk to you and approach you and give you things?
Yes.
In a rational world. I mean, obviously these women have problems with men acting like that and saying, I think you're awesome. Here are things I want to talk to you, and here are things I want to give you.
I mean,
don't you think that'd be easier?
Yeah. Well, yes, to a certain degree, without really inflaming the audience. I mean, I think I'm very happy I was born a man, because I don't have to deal with a lot of the biological consequences of being a woman, which I think are insane, and which goes to show that there is no creator, because he wouldn't have created someone so complicated. But,
and to be fair to women, you know, if they're going to just do that role where they wait, they don't get to really assert themselves with the person they want. So I'm not saying women should be unassertive. I was just making a general joke.
And it doesn't point. And again, this doesn't go to say that there wasn't historical oppression and that needed to be fixed. And it still needs to be fixed in many places around the world. But there is a far cry from fixing cultural and politically institutionalized marginalization versus trying to culturally wipe away all biological differences between men and women, which is really the aim of the most consistent and most evil forms of the feminist movement.
Right, and we were talking about the psychological consequences of this movement in these statements. I have suffered firsthand the psychological consequences of these statements, and your story of your friend, he suffered firsthand because of it.
Yeah.
Well, we're turning men into neurotic messes is pretty much what is going on.
Yes.
That's what it is. The culture is producing neurotic men.
And this is where, if anyone wants to go and read her, I actually think that the best writer on this issue is not Ayn Rand, shock and awe, but in fact Camille Paglia, who has taken an incredibly awesome stance on feminism and how it affects men's psychology and why we're turning men into what Eliot said, neurotic wimps, basically.
I just find it interesting because, like, relationships between gay men in terms of, like, sexuality and penetration, I don't know, it's very different in that regard. I don't know, but there is aggression, I guess, in that sense, but this power play, the power thing, I think it might be an element that's not typical in that.
And it actually, without getting into this area also too much, but Eliot, I think there might be an interesting place for you to write something about the psychology of homosexual romantic love and if in any way it differs from.
Well, I need to have a current homosexual lover. So if anybody wants to apply.
Send email, resumes, headshots too. All right. Well, this question got something.
No, it got interesting. But while we're talking about other people and we're talking about not getting laid, let's go to the final question. Why do people look down on video games and gamers?
What a jump.
Come on, that was a great transition. All right, this is what this person said, and it's a little long. So, I am 20, and I have been into video games for most of my life. I have also got other interests like science fiction, fantasy, history, computing, technologies, etc. Oh, man. I just see his next, like, 20 years, like, written out before him. Anyway. I could probably thank... Yeah, I think he means thank. Think some of my other interests and other topics from video games as... Oh, he means thank. Of my other interests and other topics from video games as well. But one of my peeves lately is that it's 2014 and many people still see video games as a waste of... It's 2014! Stop oppressing video games! As a waste of time, and I would like to know why. I have always been fascinated by video games and maybe would like to work in the game industry. But it peeves me to think that so many people see video games in a negative light. I generally think it's so 80s to think of video games in a bad mood. It's 2014 now, and I would think since video games are the most popular form of entertainment... Are they the most popular form of entertainment?
Question.
I think that is a good question. I mean, video games regularly now, big ones, when released, they can make $1 billion, so...
All right. They would be far more respected. But, apparently not. As someone who is interested in history, I have often looked back at older mediums and realized those other art forms were also criticized. Many of the same fears concerning video games sound a lot like the concerns over comic books in the 1940s and 1950s, or Dungeons and Dragons in the 1980s. It seems very similar. With all this anti-video game will all this anti-video game hysteria blow over one day?
I mean, video games are becoming more accepted as a mainstream thing, but I think part of it is simply that people don't view it as an art form yet. And what I mean by that is that even if people spend more time and money on movies and TV, we already have a culturally accepted view that that is art. And so even if it's something terrible like Dharma and Greg that you're spending your time with, it's still art that you're engaging with. Versus video games, which people do not view as art in the mainstream, I think.
I would agree with that, but I would look at this from a little bit of a different perspective. And what I mean by that is, when you look at the way movie and television culture is viewed versus video game cultures, there's a stark difference. How many people do you see that are quote-unquote casual gamers? People don't go around saying they're casual gamers. But most people will be like, oh yeah, I have a show I watch, or, you know, I go to the movies every so often. But gamers have this association with them that that's what they're spending all their time on. They don't have a balanced life. I feel like I should have a third point, but I don't. you understand what I'm getting at?
I think so. I think I understand.
But gaming is a huge industry. I mean, they're talking about it on the 24-hour news cycle when a new game comes out and people line up for it, or if they're, I mean, it's a really big deal. I mean, I don't know what he, I actually don't kind of buy his question. I don't think that it is looked down upon all that much anymore.
But it is, when you look at the perception of the average gamer, and he compares it rightly to the perception of the average comic book reader back in the day. Isn't there that perception of, when you say a gamer, what's the picture in your head of what that person looks like?
Leaning back in their chair, Dorito dust on their chest, glasses.
Guy on South Park.
Yeah, basically.
Right, like the World of Warcraft episode, right, you just said, where they have Cartman where his mom has to come down and... you know, take care of him when he has to go to the bathroom.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's the perception of the common gamer. It's not someone who plays casually, especially because the design of a lot of these games is, especially apps now, you either have to play them forever to make any progress or invest a buttload of money to buy these extras in order to be able to level up or whatever.
Yeah. So I think part of the problem, too, is that... It's people don't perceive, like, if people who play iPhone games, for instance, probably don't self-identify as gamers when maybe they are or they should be. So I think that's a part of it, another part of the issue.
Correct, because I play iPhone games and I don't self-identify as a gamer.
Yeah, and I play an iPhone game maybe once a day at least, maybe sometime on the commute if the train stops or... if I'm waiting in line at a grocery store or something, I'll whip out like Dots on my iPhone or Skyforce.
Or guess the emoji like I do sometimes.
Guess the emoji?
Yeah.
I don't know that one. What is that?
You're guessing like movie or television shows or common sayings based on an arrangement of the emojis that you can find on your iPhone.
That's kind of awesome. All right. New game to the App Store. So I think that's collectively, I think Elliot is partially right in that it's not a problem, and it's partially right. I'm partially right in that I think that it's people don't identify and that it's not art. And Justin is partially right in whatever he said.
And that's why there's three of us who host this podcast. So this question is a good summary of Welcome to the Midside. It wouldn't be a hysteria-themed episode if we didn't have a non-crisis of the week. Find out what Joan Rivers recently said next. The independent.co.uk has a headline here. Joan Rivers, Palestinians deserve to be dead. And then a picture of her very plastic surgeried face. Joan Rivers is known for her scathing, sharp tongue, and yet her take on the Israeli-Gaza crisis is one of the most controversial views to date. When told by a TMZ reporter that almost 2,000 Palestinians have been killed in the conflict, she raised her hands in mock shock. Now, of course, people are all upset about this, but even these quotes are, they're taken out of order, right? Which drops the context of the conversation. And that's what she did. She released a story on her, or she released a story. She released a statement on her Facebook page saying that all of these quotes are taken out of context. She didn't apologize. She just said that they were taken out of context. So what we're going to do is we're going to play the actual video. It's a minute long that has her comments in the context in the, with the TMZ reporter harassing her.
Almost 2,000 Palestinians dead.
Oh my God. Oh my God. Tell that to the people in Hiroshima.
Yeah, it was almost 100,000.
Good. Good. When you ask Colin Powell, when you declare war, you declare war. They started it. We now don't count who's dead. You're dead. You deserve to be dead. You started it. You started it.
How do you get rid of Hamas without the civilian
casualties? You can't get rid of Hamas. You have to say you do not recognize them. They are terrorists.
They were democratically elected. This is just an argument.
They were re-elected by a lot of very stupid people who don't even own a pencil.
This is the most number, percentage-wise, of civilian deaths.
No,
than World War I, more than World War II.
And you know what? Go back to the atomic bomb and what we did in Japan.
Does it make it right?
We don't start wars and then decide.
I agree with
I'm
you.
I'm sorry.
But
don't
we also,
speak
yeah.
Colin, you know, they were told to get out. You don't get out, then you know you're an idiot. And at least the ones that were killed were the ones with...
The most striking thing to me when I watched this visually is that this obviously took place at LAX. They found her at LAX and harassed her so she would talk about this.
Yeah, the other thing about this video is she talks about the quotes being taken out of context, and this article says, yeah, but it was videotaped, but this videotape was clearly edited, right? So we don't actually have her full conversation.
Well, that's true,
and what
too,
she said.
But even the full conversation they show, these people are not quoting the most important part about it, where they say, how do you get rid of Hamas? And she says, you don't. You ignore them. And then she talks about how the people who elected them made a mistake.
Yeah. Yeah, the camera operator tries to make the point that Hamas is democratically elected. So was Hitler. And I know that's sort of a reductio ad Hitlerum, but it actually is the exact analogy. Hitler was democratically elected by the people. Mm-hmm. Does that mean he was their legitimate ruler? No, because it doesn't matter if you democratically elect someone, if that person is a totalitarian, if they believe in violating your rights, then they're not a legitimate ruler, period.
Right, and she's not saying all Palestinians deserve to be dead. She's saying the Palestinians who elected these leaders who aren't good people, who are looking to oppress people and who started a war, and then subsequently didn't get out when the war started, deserve to be dead. So she's talking about a very specific subset of people.
Yes. And there's another point here that maybe Elliot wants to elaborate on specifically, but she's making a moral point about war in general, which is that currently in America we have this view that you know, civilian casualties are, we have to avoid them at all costs. And it's not that I disagree with that per se, but the morality of civilian casualties is not on the country who's retaliating, like Israel, or on the United States when we drop the atomic bomb. The morality of the death of civilian casualties is on the initiator of the war, period.
Exactly. It's not our fault that their people are dead. We should not be taking the blame for the deaths of civilians in these in places that are waging war against us and waging war against rational civilizations like Israel. We should not be taking on that guilt. The fact that many people, including people on the right, to put this in a political context, or people within so-called libertarian circles who seem to think that there's a moral equivalency between the Israelis and between Hamas. This is an absurd notion. She is absolutely 100% correct. They brought this on themselves. They voted for these people and Hamas, they were given money to build these tunnels so that the civilians could escape. And what did they do? They stockpiled it with weapons. It is on them. So I'm sorry if I come across as a cold-hearted bastard, but the truth of the matter is we need to stop dicking around with this. We just need to be upfront and honest about who the real bad guys are, and we need to be clear and take the right steps.
I agree, and I'm going to bring this back to an earlier story.
Ooh, callback.
This is similar to the Burger King story.
I knew it was going to be that one. I knew it!
Why did you know it was going to be that one?
Because it's the most absurd story.
But
it's we're hungry.
The woman who, with her kid, they were the ones in that instance being the aggressors, right? They were disrupting everything. But the guy turns around and says something to them, and he's the one who gets yelled at by her, as if somehow she didn't invite the response, and the kid didn't invite the response. It's the same mentality.
Exactly. And to bring that full circle back onto the larger international realm, when the commenter on CNN actually was disparaging Israel for not sharing their missile shield technology with Hamas, meaning Hamas is firing rockets in Israel, and Israel was smart enough to create a missile shield that stops those rockets, and when Israel retaliates, Hamas should
We're
have
talking
the
about
same
North Korea.
Opportunity.
We're not talking about North Korea. Retaliates.
Because they're Ronri. Mm-hmm. Hamas should have the same opportunity built by Israelis to defend themselves because they attacked Israelis. Think about that. Hysterical. Frightening. Awful. Immoral. Hysterical.
So yeah, this is a non-crisis because people are twisting the words she's saying to make it seem like she wants to kill all Palestinians when she clearly does not want that.
And by the way, whoever the columnist, putting quotes around the word terrorist when describing Hamas, yeah, that's bullshit.
Yeah, it's complete and utter bullshit.
Right, because he's claiming she's classifying them as terrorists, but by putting in quotes, he's implying they're not terrorists.
Yeah, she's calling Hamas terrorists.
Yeah.
All right, let's wrap this up. What did we learn this week? Daniel?
I learned that if this show doesn't get us canceled, then we can say anything we fucking want to.
All right, Elliot, what did you learn?
I learned that being a gay man in a world where women are turning more anti-men very quickly is a very good thing.
There you go. We should be the number one podcast in the homosexual demographic because we are making you feel better about being gay so you can all come out of the closet. And I learned that to make a fortune, all I have to do is find some deluded segment of the population that's willing to spend a lot of money and offer them a product that continues their delusion.
Yeah, like a church.
Exactly.
L. Ron Lesneski.
There you go.
I'm Justin M. Lesneski, and I hope you learned something this week. This concludes your journey into the midside. Good luck out there, and remember, if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.